Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Legends and Lads Cricket Podcast, formerly known as the Atambe Cricket Podcast. I am Chirunanda Srinath, your host for this week. And today's episode is houseful. We have Maitreya with us. He's joining us after his NEET exam. We're still waiting for Vijay Lokapalli, sir. Rakesh Rao, sir, is with us. And today's episode, our discussion, we're going to stick with stats or statistics in cricket. So, Rakesh, the first question that I want to ask you is, you know, there is so much buzz about this home grounds. You know, there are a lot of expectations when an individual or a team plays in their home ground, right? So, does stats actually tell you that in today's modern cricket, is home ground actually an advantage? And in what ways do home ground conditions affect a player's performance?
Chiru, first of all, let's understand why are we saying that the home ground, I mean, the home conditions favor or the home team is not comfortable playing there. It's again based on the numbers which we see. Okay, we see the records of the past, and then based on that, we arrive at an inference saying that, okay, this team has won X number of games. It's simple arithmetic, it's simple thing to say that, okay, the one side of it is heavier than the other. So we say, okay, this team has lost more number of games at home. That means it hasn't made the most of the home conditions. Secondly, if the team has done well, then we'll say, oh, they have got a fortress around it and blah, blah, stuff. It's all based on the numbers. And again, stats are something which makes us wise after the event. Or we have to use stats as nothing more than a tool which gives you a pointer to the team and say, okay, this team has done well at home. And if I am going to visit that particular venue with my team, what are the things that I need to understand? And stats provide me with a very basic understanding of it. It need not be decisive. So I for one, don't give too much of emphasis on numbers alone. Of course, it's very interesting. Without stats, we wouldn't enjoy the game as we do. But I'm talking about the stakeholders here, teams who gain from the stats. And here I'm not talking about spectators. I'm talking about the rival teams, the people who are working with numbers for them. So if you say that a particular team which has done well at home, for example, if you say Kings 11, now Kings 11 hasn't done so well at their second home ground. And how can we say that? Because all we have to see is the number of matches played at that hilly resort of, Dharamshala. And then we'll look at the numbers and say, oh, see, this year they played two and they've lost two. So they didn't adapt. But the point here is, what the numbers don't reveal, Chiru, is that this team hardly plays there. Show me one home team in IPL that plays at home. It is not Manchester United, which has a ground of its own. Right? In soccer, you can say that. But here, they all come together, say, 10, 15 days before the event. And if for that particular season, they play well, we'll say, oh, see, they have got a fortress out there. And CSK and Chepauk is one example, which we always give. And also to some extent, it is RR at Jaipur. Yes. But overall, when you look at it, because the teams keep changing, after every auction, and then there are certain changes midway through. So it is not a set unit of 11 players or 15. You don't have a core of 15 there. I mean, people keep changing. So these numbers really don't matter much beyond a point, especially when we are talking about T20 and IPL, because we are in the midst of IPL. But overall, I think when we talk about home advantage, if you go beyond IPL or beyond T20, beyond white ball cricket, in test matches, yes, what you've asked has more relevance, because one national team is up against the other, or one state team is up against the other, and where we see that, okay, home advantage can make a difference, because there you are allowed to prepare the wickets. Here, you are not allowed to. In IPL, you can't prepare a home ground like that. It is not done, because there is something called the IPL Governing Council, and it had its regulations and so on and so forth, and you have to make sure that you follow the norms. But yes, when it comes to a match involving two countries, the home team will definitely have its way. So numbers will also change. So I think when we talk about stats, I think if we go beyond white ball cricket or beyond T20, because we are right in the middle of T20, I think everything is getting influenced by that. But when we talk about stats, I think, yes, these things about home and away kind of things, yes, it does make a difference, but it is only a pointer. And I don't think any wise coach or a team or a think tank or whatever you call, they are going to lay too much of emphasis on the numbers from the past.
Yes. Maitre, over to you.
Yes, sir. So this is a very important question, you know, regarding the recent portion of the IPL, so the last edition and this edition, because it has changed due to the impact player rule. And yeah. I want your take on how it has influenced, you know, team strategies, because some say the role of an all-rounder is missing, because recently, if you see Shivam Dubey, for many matches, he was used for the batting, but he was not used for bowling. So like that, many players have missed out on being all-rounders because of this impact player rule. So I want your take on how it is beneficial or it is not. So your views.
Okay, see, now we are moving away from stats. All right. So we are now talking about the rule in IPL. Okay, so let's just focus on this. IPL, when you talk about impact player rule, this was just a one-off kind of a rule. This is not, it is likely or unlikely to be there next year, because they still have to take a decision, because whether it has worked or not. Before I answer your question, I just want to give this, you know, like background, that Jaisha was very clear that we still have to, you know, hear from all the 10 franchises. And once they give us a feedback, then we'll decide whether to go on with this for the next edition. Okay. Now, coming to your this thing, whether it has undermined the role of an all-rounder, clearly, yes. No question about it. Now, you can always go with one extra guy with the bat. And suppose you lose only four wickets when you opt to bat first, or, you know, by choice, that is. Then you can always get rid of one guy who has already, you know, like batted, or you kept him just in case he was required to come low down the order and hit those quick runs. Now you don't need him, because now you can always get a full-time bowler who can hardly hold the bat. So you can always do that. So that works for both the teams. So that actually, you know, it kind of, you know, like nullifies the advantage or otherwise with the other team, because it's the same rule for everyone. Having said that, impact player rule has also helped in the teams looking to score 200 batting first. That's why you'll see a lot of teams batting first have reached 200. Because you go in with a certain like mindset that you don't have to worry about carrying a tail ender with you. You can always go in with one extra guy who can only bat. He can be a specialist batter coming at number 7, 8 or even 9. You can actually do that. Because one all-rounder like a Hardik can definitely give you those four overs, and he can also bat in the middle of the, you know, like innings or the middle of his innings there. I'm talking about, I mean, the team's innings. But having said that, it has changed the entire, you know, like dynamics of how teams used to think earlier. And of course, it took time for teams to realize how well we can use it. Now we know that teams know the trick. So yeah, it has been very unfair on the bowlers now, because cricket has remained a batter's game and all the rules are in favor of the guy who's holding the bat. So that also means that, you know, a lot of these teams will be looking to score 200. And if this is what people want to be served, they want to see 200 every time they buy a ticket and walk in, so be it. But then spare a thought for those who are not batters.
Yes, sir. So the next question that I want to ask you is, you know, what role does analytic play in team selection? So for example, if you look at this T20 World Cup, we talked a lot about T20 World Cup squad in the last episode. But if I look at barely the stats, I can tell that Abhishek Sharma has to make it into the T20 World Cup squad because of his extraordinary strike rate and the runs he has piled up this season. But what ruled him out of this year's T20 World Cup squad was just because of the experience. So how do we balance this both experience and this analytics? And basically, what role does stats play in team strategy? How important it is?
See, analytics and stats in team selection is, again, I repeat, it's a tool. It's not the be-all and the end-all of anything. Like, if you ask Rohit and Ajit Agarkar, they'll tell you, look, when it came to, say, somebody like Jaiswal, we didn't have to look for the numbers to back his selection. He was already in there. If that weren't the case, then you would have had an Abhishek in or even a Ruturaj in, going purely by stats. But it's not so. Team strategy, the team think tank, they all have their ideas that where do we want a certain individual. Now, going by that, Hardik Pandya, do you think he deserves to be in the team? Going by statistics?
No.
Certainly not. But the point is, he's there. That is because the team think tank believes that he is a utility man, which will not be seen in the numbers or the stats, or you can use as much of analytics as you wish to. It will only be seen why Hardik Pandya is there and why Ruturaj is not there or why Abhishek is not there. So you can always argue with that. But the point is that they are only a tool and not beyond that. It does help, yes. Now, when, you know, of late we've been talking about these, I mean, which has really surprised me, but let me just elaborate on that. Matchups. You talk about matchups, okay?
Yes.
That X number of, you know, like bowler has bowled these many times to this guy and he has conceded 25 runs and he has not been hit for a four and he has got him twice out in so many innings or whatever. Now, these are again bare numbers. For all you know, those two deliveries which got him out of 25 were not great deliveries because the numbers are not delivering. For all you know, they were bad deliveries meant to be hit. They were full tosses, which was supposed to be deposited in the stands. This guy just couldn't do it. So the stats don't reveal that how good the ball was. They only reveal the dismissal.
Just to
the result on that.
Just to add to your point that as an account student, we always learn that, you know, all these numbers are reveal only quantitative aspect. They don't quantitative aspect. They don't really reveal the qualitative aspect.
Qualitative aspect. Absolutely. So that's why I for one, because I love numbers. I love stats. I even as a school kid, my rough notebook, you know, from school, it used to have all the numbers. I would actually remember the scores or the complete progression of scores of people like Sunil Gavaskar and G.R. Vishwanath and so on and so forth. I used to have the bowling analysis written in my like notebooks, and I would compare what they did on a turning track at Eden Gardens or say at at the M.H. Chidambaram Stadium, or the wickets, say, and you're like, Bombay used to be different, Delhi used to be different. So spinners, how many wickets would spinners get on turning tracks? So for me, numbers always interested me. But then as I grew up, or when I went deeper into the numbers and tried to understand how the teams look at numbers, then I realized that there's much more to it than just bare figures. So you have to look deeper into it and try to understand. And that's why I say that, you know, there, a lot of people will mislead you with numbers. There are a lot of bowlers in domestic cricket. Now I'm talking about Ranji Trophy. If you see the number of wickets taken, that'll be huge. For all you know, that's the team that has played the knockout phase. So they've got three matches extra. Okay? Three matches extra means up to six innings. Now, six innings means you are going to bowl at three different teams at least six times. So that will give you that many more opportunities to get wickets. And then you say he ended up as the highest wicket taker. Now, that's not fair because he played more number of games. His team did well and he got more number of wickets. That's why you see the numbers can be so misleading. Again, I'm talking about stats, that when you talk about, teams, if I give you the list of Ranji Trophy run scorers, you will be surprised that there are teams, there are individuals from Pondicherry and some of the other teams, they have scored tons of runs, which are much more than what the topmost batter from Mumbai has scored. The reason being, they were in that plate group where you had teams like Mizoram, Meghalaya, and so on and so forth. Every time this guy walked out, he scored 100. So you can't be fooled by numbers alone, because you have to also see the quality of opposition and also the kind of, what was the size of the boundary, where the matches were played, and so on and so forth. So this is what stats just doesn't reveal. So don't just look at the numbers and get swayed by that. So that's where you have people, who will take a pause and they'll say, wait, like somebody like Rohit or Ajit Agarkar. That day, they were very clear that we are not getting swayed by numbers and stats. We want certain people in our team, irrespective of the stats, whatever the stats have to reveal or indicate, we want A, B, or C. Or we don't want A, B, or C, or X, Y, Z. So stats is just, as I say, it's just, I'll repeat, it is nothing but a tool, and a very effective tool at that, but nothing more than a tool.
Yes.
Yes, sir. So I would like to ask you about, that different kinds of stats, like for a batsman, if you see the runs, the average, the strike rate, for the bowlers, it's the wickets, economy, average. So among all of this, which stats do you prefer, to indicate a person's consistency?
Matthew, for me, it is like I look at the format first. If it is red ball format, red ball cricket, I know it's disc cricket, 3-day, 4-day, 5-day, depends on that. Now I'm just looking at, say, like red ball cricket. So if we just divide them into two, first we look at the red ball version. There I will see, I will not look at strike rate for sure. I will not swayed by that. Average, yes. But also, what kind of opposition has bowled to him? The quality of bowlers, for me, that is important. And the conditions. Suppose there is a guy who comes in at number 4 or number 5, for example. Number 5 means 3 batters are gone. If he has walked in at 9-for-3, and he has to ensure that he not only supports the guy who bats higher up the order, also he has to make sure that he stays long enough to bat with the tail if needed. And what kind of patience, temperament, and that match sense he has shown, that match awareness he has shown. For me, this matters. That's why I'll give you an example. I rate VVS Lakshman's innings, many of his innings, far more important than what Rahul Saurav and Sachin have scored. Lakshman came in at a time when he had the last of the top order guys with him, and he could bat even up to somebody like a Ishant Sharma or a Pragyan Ojha or a Harbhajan Singh as his last batting partner. And he has either rescued the team, played a role where the team didn't lose, or he has played a match-winning role with these guys for company. So these are the numbers which the stats will never reveal. Stats will never show you. They will only show you Lakshman hit 100, Indian team won. Mm-hmm. But he never had the privilege or the luxury of batting with somebody like a Rahul or a Sachin or a Saurav or a Veeru, anybody, because he came late down the order. He didn't come up the order. He wouldn't be among the top 4. So it's not his fault. So again, I will not get swayed by numbers, but I will definitely I'll go deeper into the fact that if it is red ball cricket, what has he done? Where he came into bat? I'll look at all the numbers and then I'll go by it. But if it is white ball cricket, then the entire equation will change. I mean, all my parameters will change. Then I'll look at again the fact that when did he score these runs? The strike rate is not something which is very important for me if he has played a match-winning role. That is for me, that's the key. Here, averages don't really mean so much, unlike what I said in the past about, like red ball cricket. There, for me, average means something at least. Here, I would rather go by his ability to take the team across the line. Here, I'm only talking about the batters. If we talk about the bowlers, in white ball cricket, it is economy. For me, that is paramount. If he is taking wickets, wonderful. And here I'll give you an example. A Bhuvneshwar Kumar need not necessarily give you wickets. But in among those four overs that he bowls, if he can give you less than an economy of, say, six, I'll be happy with it. If he goes 4-0, 4-0, 25-0, I won't complain. Here, he hasn't taken a single wicket, but he has just given about run a ball, which is okay. But the point is, if a Shami or a Siraj will give me two wickets and they go for 60 runs, then I will not be too excited about it, because then I'm looking at least 200 runs on the board. Then those two wickets also don't really help me. But the point is, you have to restrict the team. You have to ensure that if you're batting second, the bowlers, what have they done? So first thing I'll see is, when this performer, this particular bowler in question, has he delivered when the team needed it? That is, did he bowl under pressure of the scoreboard? Suppose the team didn't put on much on the score. I mean, suppose he's supposed to be bowling when the team is defending, say, a 130, 140 score, which in 2024 means nothing. So if this guy has bowled well, taken two wickets, bowled very economically and helped the team win, for me, that will be a clincher. Rather than a four wicket or a five wicket haul, but his four overs have cost the team 70 runs. Sorry. Because if I'm looking at chasing 200, I'd rather take this 135 and I'll be very happy with it. But the point is, how I'm looking at a bowler also depends on when he came into bowl and against what kind of opposition he bowled, whether he bowled first or second. So these are the factors that I'm going to look at. And I won't be swayed purely by what the numbers are indicating.
So my next question to you, sir, is, in recent days, I'm aware from time immemorial when cricket was broadcasted that stats were always broadcasted along with the match. But in modern day cricket, there is a lot more importance to stats being shown on the television or wherever you're streaming the match on. And even the social media where you get aware of all the stats, and whether it's Instagram or whether it's Twitter or anything, you just go into the stats, and fans love numbers. So how is stats enhancing the fan experience in cricket world?
Immensely. I mean, you just remove facts. I mean, if you just remove stats, people will lose half the interest, because now everybody talks in terms of strike rate. And everybody now talks in terms of, last over 19 runs, gettable, man. You would never, ever believe that 19 runs or over was, anybody would react and say, this can be scored. That is because they are getting scored. A bowler conceding 20 plus runs is no shame these days. Cummins gave away 20 runs in the last over, 21 runs in the last over. It's okay. It's fine. He's a world-class bowler. We are talking about Pat Cummins, and he's getting hit in the last over like nobody's business. But the point is, it's acceptable. Now, the point is, when you say that, how the fans love it, of course the fans love it, because fans almost come prepared with the numbers. The way they look at it. Now, for example, a few years ago, if a captain at the mid-innings point or something had put on 200 on the board, and if he was asked, do you think this 200 is enough? And you would say, yes, of course. I think we are going to win this. And that would have been a very, very fine answer. But in 2024, or post the IPL 2024 edition, be ready to hear, even if a team scores 200, it'll say, yeah, we needed another 20 runs. Or I think we fell short by another 20, 25 runs, because it's not par. And just to reinforce, if you remember, just a couple of nights ago, Delhi scored 221. And the commentators were saying that at the Ferocious Kotla, it was just a par score. They were wondering, and the team won by 20 runs. So 200, the team chasing, got 200 without much ado. So now the way we used to look at numbers, that has also changed. These numbers no longer intimidate us. When the IPL started, 200 on the board looked big, but now it is coming with such ridiculous, you know, like repeat. I mean, it's coming with such regularity, ridiculous regularity, so to say, because the team batting first believes that it can get to 200 thanks to the impact player rule, as I already mentioned. And
yes,
of course, the batters have worked differently. They have worked on their, you know, on that six hitting skills, which was very clear the way you saw Head and Abhishek go after the bowlers the other day. They could hit a six from anywhere, any point in time. They could just stay there and hit. They could rock back and hit. They could go after the, I mean, they could step out and hit. They could hit a six anywhere, footwork or no footwork. The ball was still traveling beyond the ropes. So give it to these skill sets of those who are hitting these balls. Also, it exposes the because the bowlers have not been able to keep up with the improvements that the batters are showing consistently. The bowlers have to do something different. What do you do? You can't be just saying wide Yorker, because that's a very costly experience. Because to get that one wide Yorker right, you are trying five more times, and out of those five, three are full tosses. You are deposited firmly in the stands, yes. And what do? So the point is, they also have to improve. But yes, fans are loving it. From the fans' perspective, these stats being shown everywhere, every moment, because they are also interested. They also want to know. And when a batter walks in, the first thing they see is, what is the strike rate of this guy? So these were not available in the past, but thanks to IPL, thanks to the way the numbers have evolved, and of course, so much work has gone into it. I am a devotee of numbers, so I love it. But at the same time, we have to also be a little cautious, because we can't dictate numbers to actually quantify our joy. Because let's enjoy the game. The numbers will be there. Numbers are not going anywhere. But I think we are focused more on the numbers than what is actually happening on the field.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Then I would like to ask you about comparing people from different eras, like the 80s and 90s were different from now, because those days, the bowling conditions, the bowlers, the team strengths, you know, even West Indies was much stronger those days. The bowlers and the batsmen, actually, the bowling was much better those days. And now if you see the bowlers, you know, you can't say they have deteriorated, but the batsmen have stepped up, as you have said. So how would you compare those two eras, especially based on statistics?
Yeah, based on stats, you know, Maitreya, for me, I'll be very clear. I'm very happy when I see the numbers, when it says at the outset, from 2021, for example. You know, that means these numbers are limited to the last 4 years and they don't mean much. Suppose you say these numbers like Virat Kohli post 2016. That gives me a very clear cut picture. So if you earmark that particular, a starting point and you define the range, that these numbers belong from this year to this year, that adds a lot of meaning to the stats. You said comparing it just like that, say the numbers of the 1980s to the numbers of, say, 2020s, it's an absolutely ridiculous exercise. As you very rightly said, the bowling was different, the bowlers were different, the dynamics was completely different, the equipment was different, the quality of bats that you have these days. You go and see an under 15 trial at the Ferocia Kotla, and you find a 15 year old sending the ball where the nets are, or if for the trial, if the net is being put in the square right in the middle of the Ferocia Kotla, you find a 15 year old sending the ball 20 rows back. Can you imagine a 15-year-old hitting the ball that hard? But these days, the quality of bats are so good. They are seasoned ones, yes. And they send a ball a distance. So if you say during those days, not so many sixes were hit. Obviously, they were not hit. Because during those days, when you went for practice, the coach would tell you no lofted shots. You hit a couple of lofted shots, you are asked to, you will be pulled out of the nets. Then came the ODIs. Then it used to be like, okay, last 20 deliveries. So the moment you were told last 20, you were supposed to hit all 20 deliveries. Step out and hit. You were not supposed to offer a defensive bat. So the way batters were told, that changed. So now that answers your question, that why we shouldn't compare stats blindly. Like Gavaskar scored X many runs and Don Bradman scored so many runs. You know, there was a story of Sunil Gavaskar where Gavaskar was breaking the records set by Sir Don Bradman. And Gavaskar was having a cup of tea with this man in England who knew nothing about the game. Okay, he knew absolutely nothing. So Gavaskar is old friend. So he was saying that, you know, like you scored so many runs and blah, blah, blah. I hear you've been breaking somebody's record. He said, yeah, Don Bradman's record I've just broken. And that guy turned back and said, what if he comes back and, you know, like breaks his record? He must be a very upset man that you are breaking all his records. Now, Gavaskar didn't know what to say. He said, listen, he stopped playing cricket just around the time when I was born. So, and then he realized that, okay, you know, like those numbers were obsolete numbers and the records, of course, stood. So the numbers, even Gavaskar knew that it is not fair to compare. And I'll give you another example that illustrates why even some of the players don't take these stats very seriously. There was a time when Desmond Haynes was the highest century maker in ODI. I think his numbers stood at 19 at one point in time. And Sachin Tendulkar was on 18. Syed Anwar was, I think, about 15. And within a few days of this conversation, which I heard, Sachin Tendulkar equaled the record of Desmond Haynes, 1920 or around that number. So one of the journalists asked him, he said, yes. Now, how does it feel to equal Haynes's numbers or whatever? And Sachin's response was a brilliant one. He said, I don't believe in such records because Desmond Haynes never got to play against teams like Kenya and some of the East Africa and some of the teams. So he said, there are these teams which are still around and Desmond Haynes never played against these. So if he had this opportunity to play against these teams, he wouldn't have got out at all. So that is the respect that Sachin had for somebody like Haynes, where he dismissed all the stats. He says, don't just look at bare numbers. So that's why I say, don't compare. I'll go up to the extent of saying, don't even compare a right-hander with a left-hander. You know, even that is not a fair comparison. And comparisons can be made in very limited way. That is, if you see a particular match, how the two openers batted in that particular innings, it was the same conditions for both, same time of the day, same attack over after over, and how well they did. That can be a comparison. Beyond that, I don't think it's fair to compare numbers from one era to the other and people who haven't played each other. Like Gavaskar's numbers, if you say that nobody realizes that his runs came on uncovered wickets. His runs came against bowlers he didn't even know. Probably he had only heard the name. He hadn't even seen them bowl because during those days, there was no such facility of having recordings of these youngsters to know how well they bowled and at what pace they bowled, because there was nothing called such, you know, as a speed gun or something. They knew that this guy was quick, and Gavaskar without a helmet would go and face them without warning. Can you imagine? So his numbers don't reveal the kind of challenges that he faced. So that's why I, for one, you know, like Maitreya, I will never, never, never compare numbers, because that will be most unfair.
Yeah, this will bring you to the end of today's episode. I'll just end it with one remark, sir. Like numbers, a student may not like, because personally, I do not like math numbers. But when it comes and deals in cricket, we all love it. It was a wonderful episode. And follow our podcast wherever you're listening to this episode on. Rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you, Rakesh, sir, for coming. Thank you, Maitreya, for coming. Bye-bye.
Thank you, boys. Thanks a lot. Bye.